And you are tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM in New York. It is allegedly 1 a.m. Bear with us.
I'm Dan Persons, and this is my Hour of the Wolf review. We're a week out from Rise of Skywalker, and I'm not afraid to say I'm looking forward to it. I'm in the apparently rare minority that has been enjoying the latest trilogy, and the side project, Solo excluded too, and I'm anticipating another couple of hours of fun, fully mainstream filmmaking from the final chapter of the Skywalker saga. But before then, and serving as a welcome counterpoint, we've got In Fabric, director and writer Peter Strickland's horror film about a killer dress, which is now playing in theaters. And let me be clear about this. This is not your stock Needful Things scenario where a cursed item metes out some kind of ironic retribution against its unfortunate owner. Strickland, who previously did the Giallo-esque Barbarian Sound Studio, and The Duke of Burgundy, a kind of deadpan romantic comedy about a BDSM relationship that actually seemed to understand the dynamics of a BDSM relationship, has a more tantalizing goal in mind. The story has its traditional protagonist, a divorced mother of a teenage son, who's daring to get herself back into the dating scene, played with understated grace by Marianne Jean-Baptiste, and Strickland wrings both comedy and drama out of one unimaginably disastrous outing and one far more promising. But the focus of the film really is the dress, its infernal nature. It travels on its own, destroys washing machines, and is not above suffocating caged canaries, and the fashion store slash coven that has unleashed it on the world at irresistible sale prices. Strickland does pull off a narrative twist about midway through that didn't sit right with me. I'm not going to describe it any further because that'd be a spoiler. And it may be that I'm becoming more hidebound in my ways of late. You started your story as this thing. I'd like it to go on that way. But I also suspect he just didn't finesse the shift as well as he could have. But the enigmatic atmosphere is well deployed. The film set in an indeterminate period that seems to be sometime in the mid-70s, with cinematography to match and a mise-en-scène that's a little bit Suspiria, a little bit David Lynch circa Lost Highway, and there's just a lot of delicious, weird stuff, particularly centered around that store. And credit has to be given to Romanian-born Fatma Mohammed, a Strickland regular who plays a saleswoman whose pitches are indistinguishable from Zen meditations. In Fabric takes an old horror trope and uses it to explore how we imbue certain objects with magical powers. I guess not surprisingly, considering the director, the dress becomes a fetish, although this time in more the religious sense. Staged as a film throwback, it touches on needs and desires that are eternal. It's overall a beguiling experience. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
Barely getting the hang of the new console for which we were not trained, which has all kinds of cute little settings. And like, for example, when you heard Dan twice there, well, aside from the fact that this has to do with something about Dan that we just don't discuss, aside from that, it's like we're putting this on Facebook Live. Watch it, don't watch it. It's up to you. It'll be there. But what the computer that is broadcasting our sound from does is it's like on a 15-20 second delay, right? And so as I started Facebook Live, it started playing that on the same pot that's potentiometer that the computer is on. So, you know, you can hear it over and over again. Over and over again. Over and never mind.
You don't even need an echo chamber.
I don't need your mics aren't on yet. Now they are. Oops. Okay. Ian, say hello.
Hello.
Very good. Randy, say hello.
Hello.
Do that again.
Hello.
Ooh, that was nice. Ooh, you've done this before, haven't you?
It's 1:13 at night.
Or in the morning.
Hey, in the morning.
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on. We have listeners right now in California. I know for a fact we have at least one listener in Bulgaria.
And it's
morning for him.
It's morning in Bulgaria.
Have you two done this together before? You have eat. Okay. And alrighty. Is there a way? Oh, yes. Now the headphones are working, and they're not 15 seconds behind. But last time, which was just 5 minutes ago, that I was hearing myself from going forward into the past, Ian pointed out it wasn't my headphones. It was my phone.
The voice was coming from your cell phone.
Yeah, it is. Try that again, Randy.
The voice was coming from your cell phone.
One more. Wait, hold on. Now, one more time.
The voice was coming from your cell phone.
So much better when the mic
now
is
you can hear her, right?
Yes. Well, before I could, but it was because
right.
It was coming through my microphone. You see, we like to do our triage.
Sure.
Live.
Early on.
Yeah. And actually, the sound is pretty good. I have to say that. These new studios have issues, have problems, mm-hmm. but the sound is definitely superior in here. I'll show you guys the room we used to broadcast out of as recently as 2 weeks ago.
I was in it once.
Yes, you were. Ian, on the other hand, was... you were in it here because you were reading a Christmas story. It was about this time of year.
Right.
Or you were going to read a Christmas story, and I stupidly asked you to read a different story.
I think I ended up reading the zombie story instead.
Yeah. I have regretted that since. Ian was on the show before talking about something much worse than speculative fiction, talking about presidents.
Is that what I was talking about?
Presidents,
I've almost forgotten.
Yeah, presidents or vice presidents.
Ah.
It was your book, not one that you published, or
right.
You did publish it.
No, I didn't. The books that I wrote were published by other companies.
Ooh.
Yeah, must have been the first book, the Presidential Book of Lists, which was published by Villard.
That was the one.
And imprint of Random House.
Yes, that was the one.
Right.
And that was, 12 years ago? Yeah. Sound about right?
It was a while ago, I think, works, yeah.
And Randy was, about 5 years ago?
That's when I met you, actually. I met you at Aresia when you were doing a book signing for the presidential book.
Whoa.
We were still in the Ziggurat
yes.
Hotel.
Yes, 3 years it was in Cambridge.
That's right.
But since then...
yes.
Ian has started Fantastic Books, which is an imprint of another... publishing house that you own.
Imprint of Grey Rabbit Publications, LLC, which
okay.
is also owned by me.
I must know Grey Rabbit.
I'm a serial entrepreneur. It's my fifth startup business. The previous four all failed for various sad reasons.
I was so fond of the news, science fiction news magazine that dared to take on Locus.
Thank you. That one actually wasn't my business. I just worked for that. That was SF Chronicle.
No. After SF Chronicle.
SF Scope.
That's it.
Ah, the website. That was mine. Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Well, I was starting up.
I wrote for SF Chronicle as well.
Right.
I don't count that.
I think we all did, didn't we?
Sorry. Andy Porter, no aspersions.
Yes. So I was starting this company, and my father said, don't put your name on it, remembering the previous four incarnations of businesses that didn't go. I said, all right, Dad, you're right, I shouldn't. So I had to think for a name, and I thought, what do I like? I like Bugs Bunny. What's Bugs Bunny? Bugs Bunny is a gray rabbit. The URL's available?
Wabbit.
Yes, well.
You're not enunciating correctly.
I'm enunciating properly for people who want to go looking for the URL.
There's that.
Fantasticbooks.biz.
You should take the other URL out as well.
Yeah.
It's $12 a year, you know.
Thank you.
Do you know how many iterations of Our Wolf and Hour of the Wolf I've got five.
I know. I have a dozen on my various company names.
Yeah, yeah. I would hope.
I've got four of the misspellings of my own name as well.
Ooh. So, including people who don't know how to spell Ian.
Correct.
It's E-Y-E-N.
It's sort of like Eeyore.
Well, that's how it's pronounced. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Well, it's sort of like, you know, it's not like Ayn Rand.
No, it's like Ian the way it's spelled, I-A-N.
Yes,
it's
spelled but like nobody Ian's says like it that way.
Well, that's because including everybody's
Ayn
wrong.
Rand. She was A-Y-N. Ayn.
Yes.
And yet nobody ever calls the name B-R-I-A-N Brian. It's always pronounced Brian.
I know Brian.
How's it spelled?
That way.
Oh.
He's okay. Irish.
I apologize, Brian.
I don't think he's listening.
Okay.
But, you know, there
hey,
it is.
Hey, you got Bulgaria listening. Ireland isn't that hard.
Yeah, he's Bobson. I don't know how, anyhow, I was boasting. I actually did engineer Ayn Rand. She did commentaries here.
Hmm.
What can I say? There was a time when we had more than one political viewpoint on WBAI, and now it's only mine.
Even if I were to tell you you're wrong?
Then that doesn't mean you wouldn't be right. It just means that my viewpoint would go, oof, and that, you know. And since I'm wrong as often as I'm right on this program, nothing would change at all. What is it that you do when you're not publishing, Ian?
That's the hard part. I never know when I'm done working because in addition to being a publisher, I'm an editor, I'm a writer, and the few freelance jobs I occasionally pick up all have to do with writing and editing and typing. And so I'm always dealing with words. Mm-hmm. I tell people I play with words for money.
Oh.
That's the short form.
I like that. I play with words for money. That would be a very good, you know, kind of slogan.
It's put it on a business card.
Well, it's the introduction I give after the conversation of how I pronounce my name.
Okay, very good. Now, Randy, R-A-N-D-E-E.
Yes.
You, on the other hand, have had real jobs. No. You've written for Today.com, Entertainment Weekly.
No, not Entertainment Weekly. I've written for a variety. I currently write for Variety, the LA Times, and Today.com, as well as other publications, but I haven't actually written for EW.
Okay. Anybody at EW listening, you're making a mistake. Okay.
Thank you.
So you cover mostly popular culture?
Yeah, it's a combination of film and television. There's occasionally a music-related thing. I've written for Grammy.com, for example. So once in a while, there's a music-related article. But mostly, it's film and television. We're in the thick of awards season right now for film. So there's a lot of things going out on the LA Times envelope regarding upcoming Oscar contenders and things like that.
Yeah, having worked in media for the better part of a century, over 50 years, that means. This is the first year that I'm actually getting to see what the media people see. I used to piggyback off of Paul Wonder, who did our movie reviews and stuff like that, and was wonderfully infamous because he loved awful movies, like Dr. Butcher, M.D., where the slogan was, the doctor is insane.
I think we all like a certain amount of really bad movies.
Yeah.
Because they're just close to our hearts.
Except this guy got called out by Jenny Leno on The Tonight Show. I mean, he really did.
Oh, he made a thing out of it.
He made CBS, CBS, no aspersions to the great Paul Fisher, who was on before us. CBS actually did a news segment on how this guy had to be on the take because he was taken out to the Four Seasons to talk about a particular movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there with a producer and an actor and all that. And after the whole expose, Paul pointed out, did anybody bother to point out that he panned the film?
Mm.
You know?
Exactly. You got me.
You know, it's like
brutally honest.
I loved the dinner. The cruise was great. The movie sucked. Paul could be like that, but I would go to screenings on his behalf. But this year, my partner Barbara, she's working for The Verge, which is part of Vox Media, which is growing and actually one of the few media entities that seems to be thriving, other than, you know, the ones that have been in place, like the ones you write for. And this made her a member of the Writers Guild of America East. And this is the first year at our house I have to get a wheelbarrow to carry in the screeners and keep track. I have lost track of the email invites. And the only physical thing that we actually went to was Motherless Brooklyn, which I have to say, by the way, I loved.
Yeah, thumbs up for me too on that.
Yeah, oh, good, yeah. Good. Because it got like sort of like shruggable reviews.
Yeah, I think it was one of those movies that just kind of passed under the radar amidst all the glitz and glamour of everything else. It's an old-fashioned indie, proper indie film. You know, they made it for a very, very relatively small amount of money. And Ed Norton just
45 mil.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Which is amazing. Which is amazing when you bear in mind it's set in the 50s.
Yeah. In that business, yeah.
So you got to get a lot of cars. Got to change your buildings. You got to fuzz out all the antennas, wrong kind of antennas and stuff like that. Yep. I thought it was the best neo-noir film I have seen since Chinatown.
Right. Although I think we should point out that it has very little to, it's not the same story as Jonathan Lethem's book.
You think?
Yeah.
You think?
Not the same.
I mean, just because it's set 40 years earlier.
I mean, it's a very good story, but don't expect that the book has anything to do with this movie.
The lead character is consistent with the lead character in the book. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
That's the end of it.
Right.
And I just reread the book. And yeah, the two are unconnected, which is great because that means you get to enjoy it twice.
Right.
Because it's a really good book, but it's a really good movie. And by the way, if you love Bebop, that's another great reason.
Yep. There you go.
The only spoiler is the trumpet.
Yeah.
And I won't say what the spoiler is. It's just, it's the trumpet. And therefore, you like Bebop? Go see this movie. And that's true, actually, because a lot of it involves that.
Yes.
But the two of you have collaborated along with a Mr. Michael Ventrella.
Yes. Sorry, Mike. Can't be here.
Yeah. I hope you're listening, or you will be, if unless you're listening.
He has the realest job of all of us. He's a lawyer.
Yeah, but you see, he could be listening tomorrow.
Right.
In which case, his present is the past.
Oh, let's not get caught up in perception of time issues.
Well, yeah, but it goes all across the... Somebody help me here.
Universe.
Thank you. And
I see what you did there.
Oh, yeah. And the three of you somehow... came how did this book Across the Universe, edited by Randy Dawn and Michael Ventrella, published by Ian Randall Strock, come to be? And what's it all about?
Well, Alfie.
I should have had a song title. Yeah, wrong song, yeah.
Right. Well, I mean the book
that's Sonny Rollins.
The book is 25 stories by science fiction and fantasy authors, some of you may have heard of and some you may not have, doing alternative takes on what the Beatles could have been or what their history might have been if certain circumstances had occurred. And some of them are really out there. They're everything from, oh, look, they're wizards in a D&D game, or over here that we get a new fresh take on Paul dying over and over again. And then there's, you know, at least one or two takes on what it would mean if John either came back or hadn't died in the first place. So it's,
we just passed that anniversary, didn't we?
We did, yep. December 8th, actually. Yeah. Hand over the heart for John. So That's the basic concept. We have an introduction by Nancy Holder, who talks about why you need to read her introduction and how important it is to understand this particular history of the Beatles. And then we go straight into the stories. And 23 are original, and then there's two reprints, one of which is by Spider Robinson and one of which is by Gregory Benford.
Oh, okay.
So those two you will have seen before, perhaps, or not, because as I understand it, they're not necessarily in print or they're hard to get in print. Somebody at our book release party mentioned to me that they were thrilled to have, I think, Spider's story specifically in print again because it just hasn't been available.
Well, they're classic stories. Greg's story, yeah. Well, Spider's story was first published in 1985 and Greg's in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to books, short fiction is hard to come by when it's really old.
Yeah. So anyway, that's another reason for wanting to get the book. You've got some guaranteed classics in there, and then ones we are pretty sure could be classics as well. Now
some of the classics of tomorrow.
Classics of tomorrow.
Ooh.
So in terms of how it came to be, part of it was just sheer marketing idea. It's like, well, people like Beatles. Let's see if we can do something with the Beatles. And I went to Ian and I said, why don't we do something in which we tell alternate stories about Beatles songs, I think I was going to try and do. It's like, we'll have a story about Lucy in the Sky and what that character would be like.
And there's a movie that just came out. I haven't seen that movie.
Right, I've seen
although
that,
I'm a yeah. huge Noah Hawley fan.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the yeah. song at all.
Okay.
But
yes. He used the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The idea was that was what I had been thinking. And I went to Ian, and I'd never done an anthology, so I didn't push too hard. And then Ian said...
Well, Ian said, maybe, but I have to admit up front, I'm not the world's biggest Beatles fan. I like some of their music, but... They're not number one on my playlist. I'm sorry, Beatles, but they're good. I admit that. So Randy pitched it at me, and I thought, interesting. I don't know, maybe. And I think it was 3 days later that Michael Ventrella pitched me virtually the same idea. And the two
now
of them
Michael's had, mostly a writer.
Michael is both a writer and an editor. Actually, Michael edited Release the Virgins, which was the anthology we published in January of this year.
Should I mention that the next New York Review of Science Fiction Readings will be not only A.C. Wise, Allie Wise, but Hilde Silverman,
ah.
who wrote the story Release the Virgins, unless I'm mistaken. That's
one of my favorites in that book, by the way.
She's got a story in there.
I like her story in that book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Michael edited that for me, and previously he had edited several anthologies of stories based on the world that he had created. So he does have a little editorial background there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, I think, literally 3 days after Randy had pitched me the Beatles anthology that Michael pitched me exactly the same thing. And I said, wait a minute. And they were both at the same convention. I grabbed them, put the two of them together, and said, I was lukewarm on the idea, but you've both pitched exactly the same idea at me. There's some sort of synchronicity there. Let's see what we can do. And a Kickstarter project later, we did it.
Yeah, I was impressed. We did like 134% of what we had asked for. And so
yep.
we were able to add extra stories. And people seemed to be very into this from the get-go. Everybody was very excited. Even if not everybody had a story immediately that they wanted to submit, but we ended up getting, I think, over 220 stories submitted.
Whoa.
To this. We went out to several authors ahead of time and said, would you do a story just so that we would have this baseline of names people would know? And then we opened up wide and we got another 200 stories in, which meant a lot of reading about the Beatles.
So fair warning and early apologies to all the magazine editors out there. You're going to be getting a slew of alternate Beatles stories in the coming weeks.
Right,
exactly.
Exactly.
The ones that didn't make it in. And that was hard, though, actually. I'd never done an anthology. And, of course, I had submitted to many anthologies. But I'd never actually done one. And what Michael and I did, because we both wanted to make sure we picked stories we both agreed on, was we created sort of a yes file. Like both of us said yes to these stories. That was easy. Then we had a maybe file, like stories that one of us liked or the other one liked or whatever. And then we had the no's. And so the no's were like, well, we've seen it. One of us, you know, either one or the other of us had to just say no on it. But if we both said maybe, we would revisit those. And then the yes ones were great.
Mm-hmm.
And what was hard is once we got down to just the yes ones, We still had too many. So, you know, unfortunately, going to even the maybes was not an issue. The yes ones we had to then carefully cull. We didn't want stories that repeated one another. You know, you can't have the same subject matter twice. Didn't want to have too much just science fiction or just fantasy. Didn't want to have too much goofy humor. There were a lot of stories we got which we liked, but they relied a little too heavily on, say, song titles. You can get one of those in there, but you don't want it to make it all about that. So there was a lot of balancing, and I was personally trying to consciously make an effort to have a gender parity. You know, we wanted to have as many women contributing as we did men. I mean, that was not the final decision. That was not the only thing that would get anybody in. But I spoke to somebody else who said, look, you know, this is going, you're going to get a lot of, you know, older white guys writing you.
Mm.
And you want to, that's fine. You'll get plenty of that, but you want to make sure that you have some sort of balance. So there was a certain discussion along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
But that was hard because there were some stories I really liked and that I would have definitely been like, but if we only had more space. And I'm sure Michael felt the same way.
You know, across the multiverse.
Yeah. You know, well, hey, there has been vague talk, nothing in any way confirmed about a part
two. Ask Paul to write a song.
We have to see what sales are like on this one.
Exactly. Hint.
Yeah.
If you like this book, there could be another, but if you don't buy this book, there will not be.
He's been doing a lot of media lately.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten in touch with any of the lads? Not from Liverpool?
No, and I don't think that would be wise in the first place.
No, we haven't. The book is out there. It's available.
There's only two of them.
We're getting some good publicity for it. I'm kind of happy with the reviews we've been seeing and the blurbs we've been getting. And if they notice,
and
it
did very well last week at the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, got a nice audience, I must say.
Oh, yeah,
lovely audience. Actually, they were very enthusiastic.
Yeah, we had just shy of 80 people. Yes, I counted.
Okay,
of course, if you take away the number of people that were in the book, that makes it 40 people. But
yeah. No.
No, not counting like you and me and the people who were performing, there were over 70 people, which is a nice turnout. I call anything over 40 people like a worthwhile evening.
Oh, good. I'm glad the numbers worked out right.
Yeah, they did.
If only I had known ahead of time, I wouldn't have bothered ordering and bringing 100 copies of the book with me.
Yeah, you should have talked to me about
that in advance. Next time we do this.
I mean, when the aforementioned Jonathan Lethem, the last reading that he did for us, which was about 8 years ago, he sold 9 books.
Okay.
And that's Jonathan
Lethem. We
all
sold him.
Yeah, so you outsold him, as did Barbara. And so just saying, if you guys outsold Jonathan Lethem,
there you go.
You're not doing everything wrong.
That's right.
Got it.
Okay. So should we consider going to the Spider-Robinson story? And do you want to take a musical break before so that you can get some water? Illegal water or something about that? Okay, because I finally got it queued up.
Okay.
Now, queued up and getting it played on the air, these are distinct issues.
Well, this will be exciting. Let's see if it works.
Well, if nothing else, you and I can just start singing, right?
Oh, yeah.
We don't want to lose Jim all of the remaining audience.
I was once an alto, and then my voice broke.
I sing best when I'm in the car by myself.
Yeah, well,
and the music's playing loud.
Well, I had 2 drinks recently, so
yes, you did.
I'll be just fine.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. So, but let's try these people instead.
Okay.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Change my world. Nothing's gonna change
dance before me like a million eyes. They call me on and on across the universe. Float me under like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe. Like a rodeo.
Thank you, Paul. And we are tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial radio in New York City, WBAI, vibrating 99.5 million times every second. And this is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. My guests this morning are Ian Randall Strock and Randy Dawn. If you care to watch, you can do that on Facebook Live, either in the WBAI forum on my page. Oh, I have to set it up also so it's in the Hour of the Wolf page. But for now, I really recommend listen to the radio. That's really the best way to go about it. And if you go to the WBAI website, you will see a highlight for tonight's show, and it's just got a cover of the book on it. So that really tells you enough. I think I have a link to where people can actually acquire the book.
If not, you can go to... Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. If not, you can go to fantasticbooks.biz, B-I-Z, and you will see
one
all
of the
the
new domains.
Well,
all
the .com, somebody has parked and wants some exorbitant fee for it.
Yeah.
I'm not planning to pay six figures for my URL. I've got the .biz.
Right. So you can find all the links to the books, hardcover, paperback.
They're available at all major online retailers.
E-books. Yeah, where better e-books are sold.
Yes.
And or print books.
But I always recommend to people, especially when we're dealing with independent presses, to go to the publisher. The publisher will be happy to set up links to where you can acquire the book.
Yes. Well, we're also distributed by Ingram, so you can get it in any physical bookstore. Go to your local small bookstore, independent bookstore, I believe is the
right
term.
Yes.
They can all order the book direct from their distributors as well.
Okay, very good. Very good. So, Spider Robinson.
Spider
Callahan
Robinson.
Callahan Saloon.
What? Go ahead.
I have to tell the story.
Of course.
I was the slush pile reader for Galaxy magazine in its penultimate phase. It was already dying, but it wasn't, There was another editor who brought it to the hospice. But we were the ones who were in the hospital. And the editor at that time was James Patrick Bain, Jim Bain. And the assistant editor or the associate editor was Spider Robinson. And I was the slush pile reader. And the slush pile, oh my God, it was tall. It was big and stupendous. And Spider, Bain had an office. Spider had a desk. I had a drawer in Spider's desk. And
How did you fit?
I'm sorry?
How did you fit?
Let's not go there. So, basically on the floor, you know, with piles of slush pile manuscripts underneath me. And while I was going through these tremendous piles, the publisher, well, this story has been told, so I'm not worried about telling it on the air. The publisher didn't give a damn about the magazine and was trying to do it on the cheap. And he was saying, oh, you know, this magazine won't last forever. You don't have to pay some of these writers. You can drag it out. Like, who's this guy? And Bain said, oh, yeah. Go ahead. Don't pay Harlan Ellison. You know, it really, really, it's cool. Nothing bad will happen to you for a week.
Harlan will never mind.
For a week. Oh, I mean, Bain knew how to play it. Bain, he was good. But Spider and the three of us, I what did I get paid? I think I got paid a McDonald's burger a day. It was basically my salary, but I had so much fun doing it. You know, and I was working with these fine people, and when Joanna Russ had a manuscript in there, and I said, ooh, can I proofread it? And Bain is rolling his eyes saying, nobody needs to proofread a Joanna Russ manuscript. We send things to her if we have a dispute. And I said, I get to proofread it. And he said, oh, you just want to read it. I said, yeah, how about that? And so I did. So at any rate, because I knew Joanna for years, but at that point I knew Spider. And Spider, unbeknownst to me, had written a story called Dog Day Evening, as opposed to afternoon. And he has a series of wonderful stories that are set in a cross-time saloon called Callahan's Bar. Mm-hmm. And... they're very goofy. They're fun to read. Huh? You know, that doesn't always happen. But Spider's excellent at that. And he had a solution to the story. It really was a blind guy and a walking dog walk into a bar.
Talking dog.
A talking dog. Thank you.
Those walking dogs.
I've seen dogs be carried. Mm-hmm. Yours. Randy has a very carryable dog. And the talking dog go into the bar. And the end of the story after all these complications happen is that the mute guy, who's a great listener, gets to relieve Callahan of his job and just sit there and nod wisely as he lip-read people who were talking to him, which is great for a bartender. Mm-hmm. And the dog took over my radio show. That's actually in the story. Jim Friend at WGAB. And the only thing I chided Spider about was he said that the show started at 4 a.m. when actually it started at 5 a.m. And since he'd done the show so many times at that point, we had words. We indeed had words.
Artistic license.
It was the cross-time version of the show.
Yeah, that's actually what he said. Uh-huh. That was the cross-time version, but I understand that in later editions he actually tried to fix it because he's a very sweet person.
He is.
He really is. He really is. But he's a fun and fine writer. He's written some excellent, serious science fiction and fantasy.
Yes, he has. He does.
And one of the stories that he wrote is called...
Well... I was going to give a little introduction there, too, before you get to what the story is actually called.
It's your turn.
Listening to you and to Randy talking about reading slush reminds me that my first job in science fiction was as the editorial assistant at Asimov's in Analog Science Fiction.
Oh, my goodness. With Gardner?
With Gardner and Stan Schmidt. Now, Stan read absolutely everything that came to Analog, but Gardner let us read the slush at Asimov's.
Yeah.
And then after I left Asimov's, I started Artemis Magazine, read my own slush pile. And for a year,
good magazine, Artemis.
Thank you. Thank you. I miss it.
Very, very good covers also, aside from the fiction. But I remember the covers even now.
Thank you. So do I. And then for a year, I also read slush at Bain Books. And those piles that you're talking about at the magazines, the book publisher got just as many, but they were getting novels. And it was fracking huge.
We were getting novels piles. At Galaxy. Remember, we used to...
That's right. You did both.
We did both.
So my point was, when this anthology came along, I didn't want to read slush. That's why I have editors. That's why I don't have an open submission policy at Fantastic Books. I don't have time for that. So
this
I
is what John Joseph Adams did when he was at FNSF for so many years and then started John Joseph Adams Books.
Right.
And Lightspeed Magazine, Disclosure, I work there. And, well, I edit the podcasts. Well, I have to tell them.
Right. They don't know that.
The three people.
That's right. Yeah. It's not just the three of us talking. There are people listening in.
You think?
Somebody's listening to us.
We hope.
We hope.
And we thank you very much.
And we do. We do. And we remind you, by the way, that if you notice how I'm sitting here, but the phone number I need to give is 180 degrees. Thank you. But that's for, bottom. Pledge line. 516-620-3602. Become a WBAI buddy, a BAI buddy, which means that as, I don't know why nobody else describes it this way, but that's what it is. It's Patreon for WBAI. It means that you give a fixed donation every month from $5 to $10 to $500 per month. To listener-sponsored radio in New York City. So 3602. You see, they literally, I'm not joking, folks, they put the number 180 degrees behind me. Unless Ian is sitting there and can hold up the sheet for me to read.
You need a mirror on the other side of the room, and those need to be in reverse. And then you'll always be able to read them.
Yeah, and do it in the mirror universe.
Yes.
Or they could just print out another copy.
Nah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That way lies madness.
So this is one of the few stories in the book that's a reprint.
It is. One of the thrills of growing up reading science fiction, well, we all did that. I don't say all. Many of us grew up reading science fiction. One of the thrills of working in science fiction is you get to meet the people whose stories you'd been reading and loving all that time. And one of the bigger thrills of working at Asimov's and Analog is that sometimes you also get to edit those really cool authors you grew up reading. And
they wouldn't let me near that. They were wise.
They trained me. I was at the magazine 6 years before I went off on my own. And they taught me how to do that, some of that stuff. For instance, actually, when I went in to tell Stan Schmidt, the editor of Analog, that I was leaving to start my own magazine, he said, "You can't go." And I said, "Well, I have to go because none of you people look like you're going to retire and there's no place for me to move up." He said, "Oh, okay. What do you," I said, "I'm going to start my own magazine." And he said, "Well, can I send you a story?"
So, yeah, because he didn't publish much of his own stuff.
Not
did
much.
He?
No. The way to kill a writing career is to become an editor.
Except John Campbell simply took on pseudonyms.
Yes, that was a long time ago.
And people would see that and say, who goes there?
That was a while ago. But Stan's writing career, Gardner's writing career, I flatter myself to think I might have had one if I weren't an editor. I don't know about that. At any rate, Stan had bought my fiction. Stan was my boss. I left the magazine. I got to buy one of his stories. It was really cool that way. So it's in a special thrill that I'm actually one of Spider Robinson's publishers, too. I got to publish one of his stories. It's not an original, but still, it's a Spider Robinson story.
Hey, he wrote it. It's original.
He wrote it.
It's not first publication.
Exactly. But I paid Spider Robinson to publish one of his stories. So
cool.
It's kind of cool for me, too. So, apparently I'm going to read Spider Robinson's story since he couldn't make it to the reading because, well, he lives several time zones away.
And in another country.
That, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, his story is called Rubber Soul and was first published in, 1982. The version I have was from 1985. And so this is one of the two reprints in the book Across the Universe. Me, me, me.
You, you, you.
We, we, we. Okay. But I don't believe in this stuff, he thought, enjoying himself hugely. I said, I didn't. Weren't you listening? He sensed amusement in those around him. Mum, Dad, Stuart, Brian, Mal, and the rest. But not in response to his attempt at irony. It was more like the amusement a group of elders might feel toward a young man about to lose his virginity. Amusement at his too well understood bravado. It was too benevolent to anger him, but it did succeed in irritating him. He determined to do this thing as well as it had ever been done. Dead easy, he punned. New and scary and wonderful. That's what I'm good at. Let's go. Then the source of the bright green light came that one increment nearer, and he was transfixed. Oh. Time stopped, and he began to understand. And was grabbed by the scruff of the neck and yanked backward. Foot of the line for you, my lad. He howled his protest, but the light began to recede. He felt himself moving backward through the tunnel, slowly at first, but with constant acceleration. He clutched at Dad and Mum, but for the second time they slipped through his fingers and were gone. The walls of the tunnel roared past him. The light grew faint. And then all at once he was in interstellar space, and the light was lost among a million billion other pinpoints. A planet was below him, rushing up fast, a familiar blue-green world. Bloody hell, he thought, not again. Clouds whipped up past him. He was decelerating, somehow without stress. Landscape came up at him, an immense sprawling farm. He was aimed like a bomb at a large three-story house, but he was decelerating so sharply now that he was not afraid. Sure enough, he reached the roof at the speed of a falling leaf, and sank gracefully through the roof and the attic, finding himself at rest just below the ceiling of a third-floor room. Given its rural setting, the room could hardly have been more incongruous. It looked like a very good intensive care unit, with a single client. Two doctors garbed in traditional white gathered around the figure on the bed, adjusting wires and tubes, monitoring terminal readouts, moving with controlled haste. The room was high-ceilinged. He floated about 6 feet above the body on the bed. He had always been nearsighted. He squinted down, and recognition came with a shock. "You're joking! I'd done that bit!" He began to sink downward. He tried to resist, could not. The shaven skull came closer, enveloped him. He gave up and invested the motor centers, intending to use this unwanted body to kick and punch and scream. Too late he saw the trap. The body was full of morphine. He had time to laugh with genuine appreciation at this last joke on him, and then consciousness faded. After a measureless time, he woke. Nothing hurt. He felt wonderful and lethargic. Nonetheless, he knew from experience that he was no longer drugged, at least not heavily. Someone was standing over him, an old man he thought he knew. "Mr. Mack," he said, mildly surprised. The other shook his head. "Nope, he's dead." "So am I." Another deadpan headshake from the old man. "Dirty rumor. We get 'em all the time, you and I." His eyes widened. The voice was changed, but unmistakable. "Oh, my God, it's you." "I often wonder." "But you're old." "So are you, son." "Oh, you don't look it. I'll grant you that. But if I told you how old you are, you'd laugh at yourself spastic. Honest. Here, let me lift your bed." The bed raised him to a half-sitting position, deliciously comfortable. "So you froze me carcass and then brought me back to life?" The old man nodded. "Me and him," he gestured behind him. The light was poor, but he could make out a figure seated in darkness on the far side of the room. "Who?" The other stood and came forward slowly. "My God," was his first thought. "It's me." Then he squinted and chuckled. "What do you know? The family Judas. Hello, son." "Hello, Dad." "You're a man grown, I see. It's good to see you. You look good." He ran out of words. The man addressed began to smile, and burst into tears and fled the room. He turned back to his older visitor. "Bit of a shock, I expect." They looked at each other for an awkward moment. There were things they both wanted to say. Neither was quite ready yet. "Where's Mother?" he finally asked. "Not here," the old man said. "She didn't want any part of it." "Really?" He was surprised, not sure whether or not to be hurt. "She's into reincarnation, I think. This is all blasphemy and witchcraft to her. She cooperated, she gave us permission, and helped us cover up and all. but she doesn't want to hear about it. I don't know if she'll want to see you, even. He thought about it. I can understand that. I promised Mother once I'd never haunt her. Only fair. She's still making music? I don't think so. There was another awkward silence. How's the wife? He asked. The old man winced slightly. Well enough, I hear. She went right back out the window a while back. I'm sorry. Sorriest thing I've seen all day, son. You comfy? Yeah. How about Sean? He doesn't know about this yet. His mother decided not to burden him with it while he was growing up. But you can see him if you want, in a few days. You'll like him. He's turned out well. He loves you. A surge of happiness suffused him, settled into a warm glow. To cover it, he looked around the room, squinting at the bewildering array of machines and instruments. This must have set you back a packet. The old man smiled for the first time. What's the good of being a multimillionaire if you can't resurrect the dead once in a while? I've thought that a few times myself. He was still not ready to speak his heart. What about the guy that got me? Copped it in the nick. Seems a lot of your best fans were behind bars. Why'd he do it? Who knows? Some say he thought he was you, and you were an imposter. Some say he just wanted to be somebody. He said God told him to do it, because you were down on churches and that. Oh, Jesus, the silly git, he thought for a time. You know that one I wrote about being scared when I was alone that time? I remember. Truest words I ever wrote. God, what a prophet. Hatred and jealousy gonna be the death of me. You had it backward, you know. How do you mean? Nobody ever had better reason to hate you than Jules. He made no reply. And nobody ever had better reason to be jealous of you than me. Again, he was speechless. But it was him thought it up in time, and me pulled it off. His idea and enthusiasm, my money. Maybe nobody else on earth could have made that much knicker drop off the books. So you got that backward about them being the death of you, he smiled suddenly. Old Jules just doing what I told him to do, really. Making it better. The old man nodded. He let you under his skin, you see. Am I the first one they brought back, then? One of the first half dozen. That Wilson feller in California got his daughter back. It's not exactly on the national health. And nobody knows but you and Jules and Mother? Three doctors, my solicitor. A cop in New York used to know, a captain, but he died. And George and Ringo know. They send their best. He winced. I was rough on George. That you were, son. He forgives you, of course. Nobody else knows in all the wide world. Well, that's a relief. I thought I was due for another turn on the flaming cupcake. Can you? This time was nothing. It was the old man's first real grin, and it melted 20 years or more from his face. The giggles just thinking about it. He laughed aloud, noting that it did not hurt to laugh. Talk about upstaging Jesus. They laughed together. When the laugh ended, they discovered to their mutual surprise that they were holding hands. But they were both of them used to irony that might have stunned a normal man, and used to sharing such irony with each other. They did not let go. And so now there was only the last question to be asked. Why did you do it, then? Spend all that money and all that time to bring me back? Selfish reasons. Right. Did it ever occur to you that... I reckoned that if I could pull it off, then it was okay for me to do it. He thought wistfully of the green light. But he was, for better or worse, say that he wanted to stay alive. Your instincts were always good, even back in the old scuffling days. I don't much care, if you want to know the truth. It was the end of the dream, you dying, and everybody reckoned I was the one broke us up, so it was my fault somehow. I copped it all, coming to hear it. I don't remember which it, lad. You had to go and break me balls in that last interview. That was bad karma, he agreed. Did you call me back to haunt me, then? Do you want me to go on telly and set the record straight or something? I called you back because you're a better songwriter than I am, because I miss you. The old man did not cry easily, because I love you. He broke and wept unashamedly. Happy without you around. Oh, Christ, I love you too. They embraced, clung to each other, and wept together for some time. At last the old man released him and stepped back. It's a rotten shame we're not gay. Only the best damn music in the history of the world. We will again. The others are willing. Nobody else would ever know. No tapes, nothing. Just sit around and play. You're in course. How could you possibly keep a thing like that secret? No bloody way. It's been a long time, the old man interrupted. Oh, how to drop off the face of the earth. Just stop making records and giving interviews. They don't even come round on anniversaries anymore. It'll be dead easy. He was, has it been? Since you snuffed it? Get this. I told you it'd give you a laugh. It's been 24 years. You mean I'm... The old man was giggling, too. Yep. He roared with laughter. Will you still feed me, then? Aye, the old man said, and I'll always need you, too. Slowly he sobered. The laugh had cost him the last of his strength. He felt be good, old friend. Is it going to be fun? As much fun as whatever you've been doing for the last 24... I don't know anymore. I can't remember, his voice slurred. I think it was okay. This is going to be okay, too. This was always your specialty. He nodded, almost asleep now. You always did believe in scrambled eggs. The old man watched his sleeping friend for a time. Then he sighed deeply and went to comfort Julian and phone the others.
Ruddles were genius. Eric Idle, Neil Innes, and two others of the Bonzo Dog Band, who were also the people who, except Camelot, because for some reason, sadly, Neil Innes and Eric Idle, and as much as I loved, would have been that much better.
He didn't like to push the Pramalot.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you just heard Ian Randall Strock reading the short story by Spider Robinson entitled Rubber Soul.
I'm remembering that I learned long ago, if you're doing a reading, don't read from the book. Rather, print it out in a larger font.
That is absolutely correct. You did it well, as well, so that they didn't make noise in the air. Mm-hmm. I actually teach a course in this.
Well, thank you. And the point I was trying to make, though, is that Randy's reading along over my shoulder, and during the musical break, she whispered to me, "This isn't what appeared in print, is it?" I'm reading from the which came about. It's me transcribing a bad photocopy of the book into a word processing program.
Oh my duck!
So. After Randy and Michael, they edited it, and then I proofread the book. So she's finding things in here saying, "Oh, my God, that didn't get into print, did it?"
Yes,
and my OCD was kicking in.
We fixed it.
And there were other things that didn't get into print among the seven George Carlin words.
Well, no, I was actually
didn't make it
now.
Onto the air. Right. The point being that if you want to know what spider that Randy and Michael edited it, well then, you need to buy Across the Universe. Randy Dawn, that's two E's in Dawn, or in Randy. Michael A. Ventrella, only one A, but two L's in Ventrella. And I'm spelt like Strzok.
It's a thrill doing a program with somebody I've known this long, because you don't struggle each time you say my name and you don't read a note to make sure you're getting it right. On through my entire life. Introducing myself, first things I say in every conversation.
And what is the reason that they gave Ayn Rand fans? Or they, because Ayn isn't...
With Ayn Rand, and it's not spelled that way.
It's a British pronunciation, isn't it?
Well, and you don't think that way.
No, and the story my mom told me is that mother had died. Mom was in the restaurant with a friend saying, well, we're going to get married, and we're going to have a son, and we're going to name him with an I. And the woman sitting behind, woman, I have the perfect name for you, Ian. And telling, because my mother told it to me for my entire life. And it was probably 4 or 5 years ago now that my father said for the first time, that's a dad, I've been telling this story my entire life. Now you're going to give me a dad. Well, no, I like the guy who wrote the James Bond books, and I thought it was pronounced Ian. So
Ian Fleming.
I don't know if Dad's messing with me or not.
I bet your father
he may have been.
Occasionally will be like, you know, the writer, the James Bond writer, Ian Fleming. You know, I've started just saying Ian instead of Ian in all cases.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
You're winning people over one person at a time.
One by one, ever so slowly.
Yes.
Indeed, yes. And who are, I'm trying to think all of a sudden, like, who are the other Ians?
Ring.
Yeah.
But
He was on Beverly Hills 90210.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe we should get you to pronounce his name Ian just to screw people up.
Well,
he's got a TV series coming up, so why not? It's on Disney Plus, you know.
Well, I thought, although I may be wrong.
Obi Wayne Gunn.
I was thinking Ian Banks, the British author. I thought Iain was pronounced Ian. I've recently been corrected by several.
It's a Scottish Ian, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know his agent.
Right.
Who writes Ian M.
Yep.
And when he writes that other stuff, main M.
Yep.
Which is Ian Banks. And he's a great writer in either.
He pronounced it Ian because I never actually met him. Guess I was wrong.
I actually had the opportunity and I missed it by a day.
He would have contributed a very interesting story. I
think. He would have. He would have. He's a wonderful writer.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyways.
You know, one of the things that I really did like about a lot of the stories that we ended up, you know, they approached the subject was really important. We didn't want to simply have a bunch of stories that, as I said earlier, you know, the interesting thing about the Beatles and one of the reasons that we wanted to spend time with them over the course of a year is that for a lot of people, the Beatles aren't just a band. They aren't just good songs.
They're a subculture.
It's a subculture. And as metaphor, which probably would not make the living members all that happy. They're like, I'm still making music. I'm still vital. I'm nobody's metaphor. But the fact is they had such a cultural, that the ripples continue to go out and out and out, that it is possible to see them as not just characters, but characters that have extra meanings or double meanings or represent tropes or, you know, and the stories that I think that did saw them as a way to tell a bigger story, a story that had more layers than just.
Or a goof on a title.
Or a goof on a title, right. I mean,
you know, like, hey, look, he's the fool on the hill.
Right. Yeah. And you know, that can be a valid way of doing it. We just didn't want a whole book of that. There's one of our contributors, and we had been sort of looking around for other people we wanted to get into her Wikipedia page. And on her Wikipedia page, apparently she was on NPR a bunch of years ago.
And she was on BAI, more important.
Oh, and again, I don't know if she made this comment on this show, but I do remember her on the Wikipedia page. It says something
along
the lines
of. And she hit every one.
That's a challenge.
That when she was younger,
I'll have to see if I can do that.
She and her best friend had sort of Beatles. It wasn't just like, oh, we want to meet them, we want to hang out with them. They actually wanted to be the Beatles. And I thought, that story has to be told. So I'm friends with her on Facebook, and so I wrote to her and I said, "Story in you," and it turned out that she did. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool, personally, so I do not know all the details, but she's been ill.
Yes.
She's doing better. But in the story, that is a plot point as well. So it kind of has this resonance. It wasn't the passion for the Beatles that she had and her best friend had. Mm-hmm. And the story just really kind of just takes off on its own from there. And we were talking about a little bit before we sat down today, but there's been a couple of folks who we've spoken to who kind of dismissed the book as, oh, that's just fan fiction. And there's a whole conversation that actually is fan fiction.
Naomi Novik started her career writing fan fiction.
Right. I was on a panel with her at ReaderCon where we actually discussed the fan fiction.
I was
you were there for that?
Scheduled opposite that.
So you missed it.
So right. I missed it. I wanted to go to that.
Yeah, I was on. Back in the day, I ran a fan called Apocrypha, which was all Law and Order fan fiction.
Ooh.
It was primarily the main show. It died right around the time that SVU was getting started, so that'll tell you how old it was.
Okay, so who was the main DA at that point?
I'm sorry, that's right. There are multiple ones later.
There's like four.
It was primarily the Jack McCoy, Sam Waterston, but also there were Ben Stone, Michael Moriarty.
Okay,
those are the main ones at the time. But you know, I ran a fan fiction zine. I'm very much supportive of it, but this is not fan fiction, and I don't.
It really
mean
to, is not.
Yeah, and I don't mean to say, oh, it couldn't possibly be fan fiction. That's not the attitude I'm trying to have here. It's just that I think there are people who dismiss it. What we were trying to do with the book, and Ian, you said something about why it's not fan fiction.
It's not fan fiction because the Beatles aren't fiction.
There you go.
Fan fiction, to my mind, takes an established piece of fiction and extends the story
to another place.
Exactly.
But if that were true, that would mean that anything that Pocketbooks ever published with a Star Trek word in its title would all be fanfic, which in a way it is. But that doesn't stop it from being professional.
The difference in that case is that it's licensed.
But you see, licensed, there's a slippery slope.
Well, licensed and approved by the gods at Paramount.
Because what happens, for example, is Amazon bought rights to certain TV shows that they thought would have a certain kind of a following. They acquired the license for what would otherwise be termed. And they
co-opted?
No, not
appropriated.
Well, yeah,
they
yes,
set out to create their own professional life.
Exactly. Stories from people who logged onto the Amazon mm-hmm. website, there's one or two, mm-hmm. and said, you know, if you want to write something in the blankety-blank universe, I don't want to use mm-hmm. a name that probably is. And if they bought it, mm-hmm. that was fan fiction or not, is in that case whether or not Amazon paid the fee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a certain at which it's rubbish. Is Tom Stoppard fan fiction of Hamlet or of Samuel Beckett? Or both.
Is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, you know?
Well,
is
yeah.
that fan-
actually, yes.
Emphatically
so. And not only that, all he did mm-hmm. was took the book and added paragraphs. He didn't even write material
okay.
in that book. He just added paragraphs.
But it also has the veneer or the appearance of legit fic. You know, nobody really dismisses that book by calling it fan fiction,
and by the
even
way,
if it is.
And by the way, I just saw another trailer. Another.
I don't know if they've made an Emma since Gwyneth Paltrow was in it.
No, there's one coming out in February.
I know, I'm saying I don't think they've made one since then, and that's been a bunch of years.
Yeah, well, a dozen years maybe since Paltrow, which wasn't bad, by the way. It was a decent production. But anyway.
But speaking of fanfic, if I may riff on one other thing, too, mm-hmm. you know, the movie Yesterday came out. And even though it doesn't actually have the foreground, you know, it seems to be, it can't just be, oh, this is something that is cost a lot of money and therefore is not fanfic.
West Wing, that's fanfic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you continue the world of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt and you're writing fiction based in some real universe.
Or an alternate universe.
Yeah.
An alternate universe.
And
And Across the Universe is not continuing any established fiction line. Every story in the book is original with the author who wrote it, this story, and which is why it's not fanfic.
There are at least two writers who have both done decent jobs, who have written Beatles alternate universe fanfic, wrote or co-wrote Yesterday, which I still haven't seen, although I got a screener for it.
Yeah. I saw it recently, and I was kind
of
upset.
I heard it's like a Richard Curtis movie.
Well, my prop for it, just after we launched the Kickstarter for the book, so there was no way I could tie it in to write on their coattails for publicity. And then the movie was released to our schedule whatsoever, so I couldn't do anything to tie into it.
They couldn't tie in with
And we're too early to tie in with Peter Jackson, who has gotten all this behind-the-scenes footage of the Let It Be sessions. And is making a documentary,
right?
So, like,
not the third.
Well, exactly. They filmed it at the time, but he has all this stuff that hasn't been shown before. That's
right.
Coming. So we missed that window, is all. But and I don't know
so
if we want
Beatles
to.
Beatles are everywhere.
Everywhere they're everywhere. I mean,
here, there, and everywhere.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, but when you do see Yesterday, let me know. We can discuss because I have issues.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Well, I saw it recently on the DVD, and then I saw the alternate ending. It's a brief clip. Look for it.
Okay.
We'll talk about it when we're off the air so
indeed.
As not to spoil it for
anything.
Everyone.
Right.
Yeah, but before we came over here, we were at the pub, and I've said this on the air a few times, I saw the play, and now, of course, I'm Liverpool Fantasy. And I talked about it on the air, but I had several people who were serious critics contact because it was off Broadway. It was being seen by producers whether they could bring it to a big stage. And seven fame, but the premise of the play is a simple one, that the first single that the Pudlians put out was on the A side, Please Please Me, and on the B side was Till There Was You. But the reality was that Till There Was You was supposed to be the A side and was George Martin, not a writer, but a music producer. I like the songs that these lads have written. Let's put Please Please Me on. This is based on the idea that Till There Was You continued to be the A side of the single, job as a lounge singer in Vegas, and left the band. The play, which is now, I understand, a novel that I have not yet read and is out of print, later to show us what the world would be like had the Beatles not happened, which is very different from the more skiffy science fictional element of Yesterday, in which only one guy and apparently a romantic other who the Beatles were.
No, I mean, that's close, but that's not.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
But close enough for
close
radio.
Close enough. Sorry.
And so what? So this is a reunion of the fabulous Thea's house, thinking about what would have happened. And they say, you know, some of these songs were in Act Two. They take apart the song chord by chord. And you realize that this is a real musician who really got the genius of what the Beatles were. Really about how the politics of the world change. Because while the Beatles didn't create the counterculture, they brought the counterculture into mom and dad's living room. And that really changed the world. Not just the Beatles, but the fact that they were accepted as
Well, and they were also catching the wave of this country had ever seen.
And they carried that generation.
Yeah, they carried the boomers all the way, you know, through. So you had a much larger demographic of people to choose from as well. I mean, I'm not saying that if it had been a smaller generation, they never would have made it. But clearly you had that going for you.
So Act One of the plays of What Would the World Be Like is a let's break down the genius of a couple of songs. Old songs, starting with Please Please Me, and the harmony. It was like taking a seminar. It was genius. And all these big, the second time I saw it, first time was just to a sold-out audience who had heard about it. And the second time, there was nothing but Broadway producers there. There were limos, all these limos outside this off Broadway space that was in an, I think, PS1. And pick it up, because the lawsuits that would have been involved in saying what different individuals it would have been like by surviving members or spouses of members of the band would have to say. So it, I understand it ended up this to Susan Ryan, who is Beatle fans I have ever met, and her husband James Ryan has also written a whole slew of Beatles stories. He has a collection called Alt Together Now. He read one on the air, which I thought was very clever, in which it didn't happen. There's always a why the band didn't happen. Not always, but often. And in this one, Ringo left and Doctor Who. And the story takes place in the present at a Doctor Who convention. He used to be in a band. And it's very clever.
And just very important with Beatles Fest, which is the annual convention for Beatles fans in New Jersey. And then there's also one in Chicago. She's been very helpful with us. We're going to have a presence at Beatles Fest.
Cool.
In part thanks to her. We'll have a table. We're selling books. There's going to be a panel and everything. You know, if you look up Beatles Fest, you will find the information about the actual fest, although I don't know how much information specifically
now about when does this occur?
I believe the one in New Jersey is in March, the one that isn't 20 yet, but they seem to do two every year. And we're definitely going to be at the one in New Jersey. The one in Chicago is still kind of up in the air.
And there will be a link to it on the Fantastic Books website, just as
fantasticbooks.biz.
B-I-Z-Z, B-I-Z. So,
so yeah, we're looking
ask for it
that.
By name. Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll give, and Michael will his memories and tastes.
Michael Ventrolo, co-editor
of the book. Right.
If
exactly.
we let him talk.
Yeah. If we let him talk.
Yeah.
But yeah, like we have this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another seat.
That's right.
It just didn't make it onto Facebook Live or the air.
Exactly.
Speaking of, I feel like we ought to be, because it's probably really boring watching us just sitting and talking into microphones.
You know what? That's their problem. This is a radio show.
I hear they're chatting with each other, so I think that's terrific.
They are. It's multimedia.
There was a sportscaster who used to do... See, I can't even read it because...
Ian Eagle. I think that was talking about my name. Ian Eagle.
No,
sports
no.
guy.
Oh, maybe he is. Yes. That's exactly... that's
call.
Exactly.
Yep.
That's exactly what he...
You know, one thing that's interesting is, like, you know, the fact that you're telling me that everybody's talking just makes me, you know, makes me very happy.
That's a Harry Nilsson song.
Yes, it is. They're talking. Anyway, but what's interesting is everywhere I go when we talk about this book, people come up with their own Beatles stories. It's, mm-hmm. it's this communal thing people want to share. We were at we had a reading at PhilCon, which takes place outside of Philadelphia every year. When did it take? It was in early November, right?
Yeah.
It's in Jersey now.
Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
It's in Jersey.
The same hotel that LunaCon, the New York convention, was at for a year
really?
Or two. Yes,
right.
I just love the idea that there was a New York convention and a Philadelphia years.
Very interesting. But we were there, and we were hanging up posters, and I went into the con suite. And I was hanging up a poster and showing about the cover of the book. And a woman just started randomly saying, she said, you know, I met the Beatles. And we're like, do tell. And she had this great story where she was 13 and she had gone to see them when they played in Philadelphia. And she somehow wandered around backstage, which I guess is something you could have done more easily back in the day. Limousine, and she saw the windows were dark, and she looked inside to see if they were in there. And somehow she got into the car. The Beatles get into the car. John Lennon steps on her and she swore at him. But she, I guess, was adorable, and they said, well, we're going to the airport.
And who would say no to that?
Well, right? And different times, let's put it that way. You know, four grown men taking a 13-year-old to the airport, not so much.
It happened in a Richard Lester film.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And and they go to the airport, and she said they bought her a sandwich, and then the car brought her back, I'm guessing. But that was her Beatles experience.
That's a wonderful story.
And it just came out this to share, and it just – this wonderful communal experience that the Beatles create for people is, again, one of the things that really inspired us to want to spend time and put these stories together, because these are like – these are our colors. All this real stuff out there. There's some happy stuff, some ugly stuff, some great songs, some
and
songs.
Annoying. So I have an annoying story about them.
But you know, we whether or not you're a huge Beatles fan, you know about them. You know so much about what they has been for the past, you know, many decades. This sort of collective dream we've all been.
No, sharing. No other. I can't think of another thing in pop culture that comes close.
No, I think you
no, can. They are iconic for that mm-hmm. reason.
Yeah.
But for the three people out there who, like me, don't know everything about the Beatles, that's why we have Nancy Holder's introduction in the book, which is great, a little introduction. And mm-hmm. the stories it in is. Here really hold up, even if you don't know everything about the Beatles. They're really good stories, but Nancy's introduction just puts it in a more clear-cut context for those of us
agreed.
Who didn't mm-hmm. grow up knowing everything about them.
Look, here's my deep, dark secret, which is that I...
One of your deep, dark.
One of my many deep, dark secrets.
I hope you have many, but go on.
Read more books. is that I'm not a massive, massive Beatles fan, but I have become much more of one in the past year. I grew up in the 80s, and this is what I like to say. When the Beatles song would come on the radio, it was not my era. It was one of the old songs. But the DJ would act as though Jesus Christ himself had stepped down onto earth yet again to share some music. And my reaction to that was like, yeah, prove it. And so I kind of had this adversarial feeling about the Beatles for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But over the years, you know, I'm a Paul fan. Paul's stuff really reached me. I became that kind of fan who liked a lot of the songs. And then I married somebody who is a massive Beatles fan. He's a George guy. He plays the bass. You know, he's a music guy, and he loves the Beatles, loves the Beatles. So I've learned a lot more in the past 10 years since we've been married. And then doing this project, again, opened up
Marrying Tomorrow.
Whole nother area. So I've become much more appreciative of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the Beatles Fest last year, Maury's my husband. We went last year just to scope it out, to see, oh, is this a place where we might want to bring the book when the book is done? And we came, one of the first things we did was we walked into this big auditorium. There's a guy on stage doing a presentation, like, you know, like an academic presentation of the White Album. And he's got slides.
Well, yeah.
And he's breaking out the chords for you. And he's showing you what this demo sounds like. And the guy's name is Scott Fryman. And he does this for every single Beatles album. It's called Deconstructing the Beatles. And you can buy the DVDs and all of that. And that blew me away. And Maury was very excited. We got all the DVDs.
Has he put out 9?
He hasn't done every single album. He's very close to doing all of those. But we sat down and watched all of those, and I feel like I have a much deeper understanding of why the Beatles are important, what makes them the influence on all the other music that I love. And we actually got him to give us a blurb for the book. So, yay, Scott.
You see, when I'm like 9, 10 years old, there was nothing else you could hear on the radio. Mm. And I didn't care. I didn't want to hear it. I was waiting for the next thing by the Weavers, you know, or 1962, 63, and I'm 9 years old. No, not square. If you're into the Weavers, anything but you're waiting for the FBI to knock down your door.
I'm not laughing at Jim. I'm laughing at Randy signaling to Jim.
I'm just thinking of, you know, the joke about, oh, there was the great folk scare of the 60s.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. And it was. I mean, people were being arrested for that stuff, for mm-hmm. Woody Guthrie, for Pete Seeger, for Phil Oakes, for Bob Dylan.
You know, yay for them.
And all that. And that was my music. And mm-hmm. the Beatles, I don't know what happened, but then Abbey Road came out.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I was a convert. Yeah. I don't know why Abbey Road did it. Octopus's Garden, I don't know what it was that then threw me into this retro thing where I became a huge fan. But I couldn't go You know, my older brother takes me to his friend's house, and the younger sister my age, the only song she could play, it was a 45 on one of those turntables that would pick it up and play it again and and again, was "I Want to Hold Your Hand. I Want to Hold Your Hand." And it's like, I was just not into the world where on WABC they would say instant replay and play a song for the third time.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
There's not many songs that are going to stand up to that.
So I hated that. And then the next thing, I am going with a group to see a movie which years later I'm not a big fan of. It's a mad world. And we're going to the Cinerama Theater for the original run and all that, and our bus can't get there from Queens because we're passing by the Plaza, and outside the Plaza Hotel, there was no traffic could move because there were four guys that were standing on the balcony. One of them, I couldn't tell, but it must have been John, doing, you know, the Queen's wave where you just move your wrist back and forth instead of actually waving at people.
Right, the back of the hand.
Yeah, right. that's the motion. Thank you. And we missed the movie. And in retrospect, that may have been the better choice. I hated what they did to Spencer Tracy in that movie, but that's another show.
That's another story.
It really is. But I don't think there's anybody who loves or hates or is like meh about the Beatles who hasn't been affected by them to perhaps an unknowing extent in our culture. They are giants of the latter 20th century culture that we still feel to this day, which is why movies like Yesterday are still commercially viable, whatever else one may think of it.
Right.
I just think of it as, another Richard Curtis film. I wasn't that big a fan of Groundhog Day, but I liked it.
Did he write Groundhog Day?
Didn't he? Am I wrong?
I do not.
It feels like.
He did for Weddings and a Funeral, and he did Love Actually.
Oh, yes. Let's start with that film that I don't like.
Oh,
you take the one you find.
Which one?
Well, first of all, Andy McDowell. Secondly, which maybe that's why I'm confusing it with Groundhog Day. Andy McDowell.
She's in both.
And the thing is that you find the character who you like the most in the movie and you kill them off. You're watching a Richard Curtis film, with the exception of the one that he did with Julia Roberts and
Notting Hill.
I almost said Hugh Laurie. No.
Hugh Grant.
Richard Grant's brother. It's the other way to look at it.
Groundhog Day. Yeah.
I like some Richard Curtis stuff.
I like Richard Curtis, too.
I like Butterflies. Who remembers that?
He is married, by the way, to the granddaughter of Sigmund Freud. So there's some trivia for you.
Oh, my duck. Really?
Yeah.
I may have met
Either
her.
Either that or their partners, one of the two. But, yeah.
I may have met her because, of course, this radio show was created by the granddaughter of Alfred Adler.
Right.
As in Freud, Adler, and Jung.
There you go.
We have Richard Curtis' screenplay and story Yesterday.
But not for Groundhog Day.
Oh. That was the issue.
I think that's probably Ivan Reitman?
Oh, that sounds Reitman.
What's his name?
By the way.
Anyway.
Ivan Reitman. Have you seen his son's trailer for the next Ghostbusters?
No, but
it doesn't even look like a comedy.
Seems to be a Stranger Things.
It's obviously a Stranger Things thing, but it's stranger than Stranger Things.
The guy who was the director, Harold Ramis. I always think of them together.
Bingo.
Harold Ramis, because he was in Ghostbusters. So.
Yes, he was in, and they're all
and
part of
Ramis, that. Groundhog Day was Harold Ramis and Danny Rubin.
There you go.
Okay. So they're within the clique, except one's English and one's British. No, Richard Curtis is his own brand.
Yeah.
The same way that Reitman, father and son, along with Ramis and John Landis, not Max Landis, Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I like some of the scripts of Max Landis. It's too bad that he's allegedly such a...
Okay.
Anyway.
I mean, his version of Douglas Adams...
Hitchhiker's Guide?
No.
Oh, the Dirk Gently?
Dirk Gently. Holistic Detective Agency. There were two versions. There was a British version, and there was a BBC America Canadian version.
Right.
And that was mm-hmm. Max Landis. Oh, and that was genius. That was genius.
Okay, I didn't remember that.
And they did a wonderful ending to the second season, and it ended there because he became a member of the... the opposition would be the Me Too crowd. He apparently treats people poorly on Twitter and things like that and has said some terrible things, which makes it very difficult for him to hire. I had dealings with his father, John, both in fandom together, fanzine fandom as opposed to con fandom. So I knew John Landis and I, we know each other's names. Aside from knowing John Landis's name as being the fall guy for killing Vic Morrow, which is true.
Yeah.
People know that story. We don't need to go into it now. We have, believe it or not, only 10 minutes left.
Wow. Time has flown.
It does. It do that.
It's flown across the universe.
As it were. And people can call. If you'd like to. Thank you. And you can see it on Facebook as well. If you would like to call in and talk with Ian Randall Strock and or Randy Dawn about their careers and about the book Across the Universe. The telephone number here in Brooklyn is, for some reason, 212-209-2877. Again, 212-209-2877. This is assuming that I can figure out from this console we've got which one of these... is the telephone.
Well, while you go looking, I was going to ask Randy.
Admit to it.
It
go
was
ahead.
Interesting when you mentioned your fanzine history with Law and Order that you did not mention a certain book.
Yeah.
That's right.
I didn't get around to that part of things. I was thinking about the fanfic. I am the co-author of the Law and Order SVU Unofficial Companion, also available on Amazon. As well as other fine bookstores. For what it's worth, it came out in 2009 when no one suspected that the show still had 11 years in it.
And I'm shocked now, especially after seeing the trailers for the upcoming season.
Yeah, it's become its own formula, and it's got a really, really loyal cadre of fans, and that's terrific. But it's should I be putting these on? Okay, I am putting on headphones, pardon me.
Yeah, because we're actually getting calls.
So anyway, it's great for the first, 12 seasons. And then, of course, has nothing to say about anything after that.
Okay. Now, I'm putting caller on the air, but bear with me while I figure out how to get it on the air. Now, I've got you on the phone. Say hello. Okay, keep saying hello until we actually...
He's pushing buttons.
We need to turn the camera around so that you can see Jim doing this.
Say hello now.
Alas,
poor York.
Looks like it's still ringing.
No, that's a different line.
Wow.
No, I've got this line on the air, and I pretty much thought it was that button there. And, this. Let's try it again.
Are you
okay?
We have success.
Is it working?
It is working.
Is it working?
Good morning.
You're
on the air.
Good morning. I wanted to say hello and just point out that in your aside a little while ago, when Ian mentioned Everyone's Talking, you said it was a Harry Nilsson song, when in fact it's a Fred Neil song.
Oh, my God, you're right.
And the story is, listen to this, I don't know if you know this, Harry Nilsson was in fact hired to sing the title song, and he was also
for the movie,
commissioned...
Yeah.
He was commissioned to write the title song, and they either gave him a script or showed him the movie or parts or whatever. And he wrote this brilliant song that fits with the movie called the Lord must—I believe the Lord must be in New York City or something like that.
Well, it ended up in Midnight Cowboy.
Right.
Yeah, well, but it just fit perfectly with the movie. But for some reason, they felt that it was blasphemous, or people would think it was blasphemous.
Most of what Harry Nilsson did was blasphemous, yes.
Yeah, but I say, why bother when, in fact, you're putting out an X-rated movie? That was an X-rated movie at the time.
It was, so was Clockwork Orange.
The only X-rated movie to win Best Picture ever.
You know? Clockwork Orange, didn't that win Best Picture?
No.
Well,
it was nominated anyway. But,
I can't imagine Clockwork Orange could win Best Picture.
It was nominated, I just wanted to say it's and they decided no. Instead, they gave him this Fred Neil song to sing.
Hmm. Wow.
Did.
You know, I think I probably knew that 35, 40 years ago. How many people out there know Fred Neil? I do.
Right.
Steve Post used one of his songs for an outro. Time keeps tick-tocking away.
Hmm. No. That was Fred Engelberg.
Oh no! I'm getting all of my Freds and Nielsens. So Neil Innes probably wasn't really the guy because it's a Neil thing. Okay.
Fred Engelberg. This time is tick-tocking away.
And, okay, you are a repository of what should be my memory.
Well, I would like to say hello to Ian. And,
hi there.
Yeah. Hi there. And I know you and your entire family, in fact. I used to attend your
weekly...
But
does Ian know that you know him?
Well, the voice is familiar, but I haven't put a name to it yet.
That's okay, but I used to attend your weekly poker game on East 18th Street, was it? Or East 9th? I think
it was. Close
enough
for radio.
But yeah,
let's not give locations on the air.
Yeah. No. Well, hi there.
Jim will tell you who I am, I believe.
Not yet. Jim won't.
Not yet.
Oh, you're Fred Neil.
What?
You're Fred Neil.
Yeah,
Fred
do.
Engelberg? No.
Humperdinck.
That's Fred Humperdinck and Engelberg.
You recognize my face after 30 or 40 years. So
yes, I did.
You should certainly recognize my voice at all. In fact, Ian, I'm the one that left you the message correcting your 99.1 to 99.5.
Ah, okay. Thank you. Yeah, I typoed the frequency of the radio station.
Yeah. But, you can say your name on the air, by the way.
No, I'd rather not.
Okay, you won't, but you can. But okay, fine.
I can. Oh,
well, thanks
okay.
for the correction.
Yeah, and in fact, this is the first time I've listened to Jim's show in about 30 years.
Wow.
Well, gee, thanks.
If
Jim, only I'd remembered my Nielsen's versus Engelberg's.
See, you should have invited me long time ago.
And Innes's.
As you know, James, I am not a science fiction aficionado. And I just haven't, but I noted that Ian was going to be on tonight. And that's why I listened, because I hadn't seen or heard anything about him in years and years and years and years.
Yeah, although I will say
that... Well, I'm such
a
shrinking violet, it's hard to find me.
While the general topic of the show is science fiction and fantasy, etc., the programming is not intended for aficionados. It's intended for anybody and everybody, and that just happens to be the topic, just like Law and Order is not made for lawyers or cops.
Okay. Well, do you still play Steel Eye Span on occasion?
I will in about 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Wait, is that your outro?
Yes. Sales of Silver.
Okay. So I'll keep listening then, and I'll... do you still have poker games? Or
no, unfortunately, too many people moved away. Couldn't get enough
people.
And
the nights, I was going to go, but the nights were too inconvenient.
Yeah?
Not to mention the Squires.
Mm-hmm. And are your parents still alive and well?
Of course they are.
Okay, good.
Your
sister's somewhere up in, who knows where?
My sister's up in Massachusetts, and my folks are in Florida for the winter.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe one of these days we'll run into each other somewhere.
Maybe you'll do a radio show again.
Well,
We could out you, you know. We're not going to.
No, don't. I almost came to that the thing you have downstairs, the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings,
yes.
Yeah, because Ian was there, well, I guess, a week or two ago. But I forget what else. Something really conflicted with it that I really had to go
to. They do a lot of good stuff there, and I do one of the things there once a month.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes, the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings is in its 29th year.
That's once a month, not once a week. Oh,
it's
okay.
once a month, first Tuesday of every month.
Yeah, no, the only thing I've been to there are, you know, David Rothenberg's and Malachi's stuff there. I don't think I've ever been to another.
Well, we're infectious. We sort of, you know, seep through the cracks onto the ground floor.
Okay. Well, anyway, I hope you learn this new board. As a matter of fact, I was at the party Sunday for... The party for the new board.
Yeah, let's not discuss WBAI and the word board, shall we?
No.
Let's agree to keep those words far apart from each other, and you know why.
I know why. Yes, and I told Bertolt I like the fact that we're celebrating the new studio, the new master, the new board, but I'd rather be celebrating the graduation of all the people that are trained to use it.
Yeah, I'd rather celebrate the training of the people on how to use it.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I want to grab one more phone call before we have to go off the air in 60 seconds.
Jim, Ian, good talking to both of you. And
nice to hear from you, too.
Sometimes.
Thanks for being a fan.
Okay, bye. Oh, and on that note, the other call went away.
Aww.
And part of the, there one is. Hi there, you're on the air.
Oh, you got 60 seconds, so I'll just say, great story. I'm looking forward to reading the book. Maybe there's a story in there about the Beatles being wizards. I just want to tell you a very quick story about
Beatles.
Okay,
when you say
music.
Very quick, on 30 seconds left.
Yeah, 30 seconds. I once attended a bluegrass festival in Bean Blossom, Indiana, and one of the first buses that showed up was full of Japanese bluegrass fanatics. And their entire weekend, they were playing nothing but Beatles songs.
Wow.
There's a group up in Boston called the Charles River Valley Boys. They did a recording called Beatle Country, which was in the Great Classics.
5 seconds.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
And on behalf of Spider, thanks for liking the story.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've got to find the outro and get that started and sign out of accounts and get ready for people to listen to Burn Baby Burn Clappers with Lister coming up.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. You know what? Well, I'm trying to deal with this Mishigas.
Yes.
That's a technical term, listeners. I want you to each outro each other. My co-guest has been
Ian Randall Strock. Make sure you pronounce it Ian. And
sitting to my left, the ever talented Randy Dawn. Find her writings everywhere and anywhere at, I've forgotten your URL.
RandyDawn.com.
RANDEE Dawn.
DAWN.com.
Indeed. And
this has been
Jim
Freund.
I will do that shortly, but I do want you to.
Well, I have one other thing I could say if we can cut off at any time.
Say where to get the book again.
You can get the book at.
The book is what's. You have a book. What's it called?
The book is called Across the Universe by Michael, edited by Michael Ventrella and Randy Dawn. Come to fantasticbooks.biz, and it's right on the front page. You can find it. Links available everywhere.
With stories by Spider Robinson, Jody Lee Nye, Charles Baruch, Gordon Lindsner, Lawrence Watt Evans, Alan M. Steele, Sally Weiner Grotta, Kenneth Schneier, David Gerald. Shall I keep going, or have we run out of time? Cat Rambo.
We have run out of time, and I'm trying to make the music low, but it won't go low. It only goes loud.
Anyway, lots of great authors. Please buy the book. You think
or ask your bookstore to order it for you.
Better yet. Okay, so thank you both for being here. Thank you all for listening. Everybody be good to each other. Tune in again next week. If I'm not preempted, I was preempted this week and then emptied again. So I'm so pleased by that. Yeah, same here. So stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers. Have a good morning.